KALW.
Persona que pierde su cultura es persona.
A person who loses their culture is like someone disconnected from their mother.
A leader in the Bay Area's Mayan community talks spirituality and the impact of colonization.
If we lose our grandparents' teachings, we will be orphans, completely lost.
Then, why does a former Marine and school district employee want to be mayor of San Francisco?
I use a little tough love. I think we have all the resources and everything necessary to help the homeless here in San Francisco, but we don't push them.
A conversation with candidate Paul Ibarra Robertson and this week's audiograph sound.
Down, relaxed. Raise up, draw back.
Where's that from? Find out on Cross Currents coming up. I'm Henat Baba. Before we get into today's show, I want to invite you to join KALW. You're already listening. Now become a member. That one small step really means a lot to us. More than two-thirds of our funding comes from listeners just like you. So please keep listening, learning about the Bay Area, but also take 3 minutes to make a donation. You can go online to kalw.org and click Donate Now. That's kalw.org. Or you can call 1-800-525-9917 and make a donation there. The number again is 1-800-525-9917. You make our work possible. Now let's get on with today's show. This year, Border Patrol has apprehended over 800,000 people and counting at the Mexican border. Most of these immigrants are from Central America, and many of them identify as indigenous. Ethnic Maya from Guatemala and other countries are escaping gang-related violence, prejudice against indigenous people, and food insecurity at home. They're building new communities right here in the Bay Area, and they're bringing new languages and belief systems with them. KALW's Teresa Katsarilis met with one spiritual leader in this community. Pascual Yashon is Caxical, a Maya ethnic group from the Guatemalan highlands. He's a caseworker for San Francisco's homeless outreach team. And in his off hours, he uses traditional Mayan practices to help community members navigate difficult decisions in their lives.
Pascual Yashon lives in a quiet house near the bay in San Pablo, where he takes care of chickens and bees in his spare time. You'll probably hear the wind chimes on his front porch throughout this interview. On a sunny afternoon on his day off, a woman shows up at his home with her young son. Do you have some time now, or should I come back later? She asks. Yashon tells her he has an opening in about 45 minutes.
Ella es una persona que vino en una ceremonia en estos días y...
She attended a ceremony a few days ago and would like to speak with me, Yashon explains. Yashon is better known as Tat Pascual. Tat means father in several Mayan languages. He's a spiritual leader, or ajij, and he has been traveling between Guatemala and the Bay Area for almost 20 years. In 2001, Maya in the Bay Area requested that he visit them.
Las personas que vienen del área Maya son los que me han invitado para...
They invited me here, Tat Pascual says, to be a guide and teacher to them. Today, he lives in the Bay Area full-time. There are just so many families from different Maya ethnic groups here, people who are mam, quiche, or cachiquel.
Persona que pierde su cultura es persona que se desconecta totalmente de su madre.
A person who loses their culture is like someone disconnected from their mother, Tat Pascual says. It's an impoverishment. If we lose our grandparents' teachings, we will be orphans, completely lost. Outsiders sometimes call leaders like Tat Pascual medicine men or spiritual guides, but neither of those terms are really correct. Tat Pascual is an ajij, and in the Mayan language quiche, that means something specific.
Aj es el hacer. Y ich es como el sol o los días.
Aj means to do, and ich means the sun or the days, he explains. So ajij literally translates to something like calendar keeper or the keeper of time. The ancient Maya were accomplished astronomers, and their calendar system involves several different calendars, one of which is sacred. Tat Pascual says that being a calendar keeper involves something philosophical.
Lo que tiene relación con la vida humana para medir la vida humana,
that thing that's integral to human life, that measures human life, that guides, sustains, informs, and balances human life, that is something we experience as time, Tat Pascual says. You and I and all people have always lived within that great energy, the force that sustains the days.
Los nahuales, o sea, la fuerza. El que sostiene
it's
los
an element
días.
Like any other, ejemplo, Tat Pascual says, as basic as water, earth, air, fire.
Es el tiempo. Necesitamos del tiempo.
We all need time, yo tengo, he says. I'm almost 60 years old. I need to center myself. There are things I need to do in my mind, in my life.
Cuando no hay aire,
if we run out of air, we die in a few minutes. If we run out of time, that, of course, is the same.
Igual el tiempo.
As an achich, Tat Pascual's job is to use Maya philosophy and the sacred calendar to guide people through their lives. The sacred calendar is composed of 20 days, or nahuales, and Tat Pascual says being born on a certain day can influence certain aspects of your character or personality.
Cuando alguien dice, estoy enfermo, necesito esto,
if someone tells me I'm sick or I need to fix a situation in my life, we need to look at the big picture of their lives, says Tat Pascual. A lot of the time, the answer is inside them. If this is reminding you of astrology right now, it's a lot more complicated than that. There's a lot about a consultation with Tat Pascual that can feel more like counseling, for instance. Our lives can get tangled, and the K'iche Maya term for the sacred calendar, Cholok Ich, roughly translates to an untangling. When Tat Pascual works with someone, they're looking at Nahuales symbols that help us grapple with or conceptualize what's happening around us. Tat Pascual also facilitates traditional fire ceremonies in parks throughout the Bay Area, which can help people center themselves and reconnect to their ancestors or Nahuales. I went to one of these ceremonies with Tat Pascual. It was private, and I was asked not to record. This is audio from a very similar ceremony held in Guatemala. The ceremony is called Nueve Bats. Nueve Bats is the day of the woman, Tat Pascual explains. At the ceremony I went to, he and the other men in attendance watched respectfully as a group of women facilitated the ritual. We walked in a circle around a fire and made offerings to it. Sugar, tobacco, in some cases unpopped popcorn. There always needs to be an offering, Tat Pascual says, to the Nahuales, to the great energies that are here with us. Maybe incense, flowers, or candles. Our ancestors understood the value of life and how to pay for it.
Yo siempre digo, nuestros abuelos entendieron en grande la vida.
Tat Pascual learned about traditional spiritual beliefs from his grandparents. He remembers going to ceremonies when he was 9 or 10, but at the time they were held secretly in the mountains.
Y a escondidas, porque que no nos vieran la iglesia.
They didn't want people from the church to see us, he says. Maya traditional beliefs have survived hundreds of years of persecution, or, as Tat Pascual puts it, three separate holocausts.
El primer holocausto fue cuando llegaron los castellanos.
The first holocaust was committed by the Spanish as they colonized the Americas, he says. They eliminated our leaders, our women and children, and they also burned our books.
Los exterminaron.
It took the Spanish a little under 2 centuries to fully defeat the Maya, and the destruction of Maya literature was actually official policy under some Spanish bishops in the Americas. They saw Maya cosmology as a threat to Catholicism. According to Tat Pascual, the second Holocaust occurred during the formation of independent nation states in the Americas. Thousands of indigenous lives were lost in the ensuing wars. The third Holocaust, that would be Guatemala's civil war, which started in the 1960s and devolved into a genocide against Native peoples.
250,000 Guatemalans died or disappeared.
The military killed entire communities, he says, and they killed spiritual leaders like the achich, or calendar keepers, first. They were the ones who kept the spiritual teachings. Many Maya don't practice traditionally anymore, and thousands of Maya have been forced out of their home countries.
Por no tener la respuesta a sus necesidades primarias.
They've immigrated elsewhere because the government in Guatemala and other countries are not providing them with basic necessities like healthcare, education, or even basic safety. Villages have been abandoned by the government, Pascual says.
Son comunidades, son pueblos abandonados por el sistema de gobierno.
As their community settles in new countries, Tapascual and other Ajij have followed them. He knows Ajij in Costa Rica, Colombia, Ecuador, and throughout the United States. And like him, they're helping their people preserve their culture, one ceremony at a time. In San Pablo, I'm Teresa Cotsarillas for Cross Currents.
Teresa Cotsarillas is KELW's immigration reporter. You can find her stories online at kelw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Paul Ibarra Robertson joined the Marine Corps as a teenager. Later in life, he spent his time helping guide teenagers as dean of students at San Francisco's Galileo High School. Now, he says he can draw upon those and other experiences to lead San Francisco as its next mayor. KALW's Ben Trefney sat down with the candidate to talk about what the city would look like under his guidance.
So on your website, you call your plan for the city the Grand Vision, and I want to go through that vision piece by piece. So the first one is something that everybody in the city talks about, obviously, it's homelessness. So what's your idea around homelessness?
You know, as being in the Marines and being a dean of students in the district, you know, I use a little tough love. I think we have all the resources and everything necessary to help the homeless here in San Francisco and slash addicts. A lot of them are drug addicts. But we don't push them to the services. I think they would appreciate it. Of course, they have to go through a period of detox. They might not like it then. But in the end, if you were to find some of these addicts and they went through the system, if they came out clean, I'm sure they would thank you for that, because I know they don't want to be on heroin or hooked on heroin.
What's your answer then to provide that detox and help out homeless people? I mean, obviously it would take certain allocation of resources, certain kind of strategy.
Right. I think we could use something like one of these, what's it, CPMC hospital. I think they opened a new one on Van Ness, but I'm pretty sure that's CPMC. So they have two. They have one on California Street.
Right.
But we could use the hospital and put money into that. It's already existing. There's already the rooms. Everything's there. And have the detox there, you know, with staff, move some staff there, detox them there, and make sure it's secure, you know, with sheriff's officers in the lobby, just like they do at General Hospital, something like that, so they're not running around. That's what I found out is in my experiences working in schools, you know, as a dean. Right away, I would just take care of the hall walkers in 2 days. You know, I had my own style. In 2 days, the hall walking would be almost down to nothing. There'd only be a few tough guys that are out there that were waiting to challenge me.
What was that style?
Well, I'd confront them. You have to confront them, you know, and they're going to argue. It looks ugly at first because they're not used to the discipline, or they're not used to anybody telling them what to do. They're not used to any rules or any law and order. And that was my job in San Francisco Unified. They'd only walk in the halls because they could.
Do you think that it would apply in a similar way then with homeless people in San Francisco?
Oh, sure.
For you, like kind of my law and order kind of mentality, essentially?
Sure, sure. You just have to tell them, look, we're not here to mess you up, but this has got to stop. You need to go take advantage of the services.
So do you think that you would like incarcerate a whole lot of people like right away as mayor?
Oh, no, no, no.
I mean, because you would have to figure there'd be a lot of resistance or people who either on purpose wouldn't listen or on accident wouldn't listen to what the police are telling them.
You can do things without incarcerating them. You'd have to cite. You could probably cite them. After a while, the ones that are still doing it, then maybe you would have to incarcerate some of them, sure.
So it does sound like a stepped up police presence.
Yes.
Let's jump into another thing you definitely have a lot of attention on in the Grand Vision, which is traffic and transit. So we'll start with the header of road conditions.
Oh, my goodness. The road conditions in San Francisco are horrible. It drives me nuts. There's just potholes everywhere. I would take some of that $500 million they spent like last year on the homeless. I would cut that budget down and use some of that money to go towards paving the streets.
So you'd put less money in homeless services and put that into street repair.
Right. But you can't just take it all away from the homeless. You can divvy it up, maybe make a six-year plan.
So another issue is parking. So what are your thoughts on parking in San Francisco?
Oh, my God. Parking is getting bad, especially in the business districts. I don't know how they expect these small businesses to survive without the parking.
But so where the city is kind of leaning towards less parking, trying to push transit or biking more forward, you want to provide more parking.
Well, they want everybody to ride bikes in San Francisco. I can see it. It's I think it's insidious. They want everybody to ride bikes in San Francisco, the hilliest city in the country. And how is that going to happen? I'll tell you, you remember when they used to have those, what do you call those, Black Fridays, or when the bicycle riders would ride?
Critical mass.
Critical mass. Even the leader of Critical Mass, I still haven't seen him riding up a hill with a sack of groceries on his bicycle.
Well, he might have an electric bike now.
He might. But, you know, I'm telling you, it just can't be done.
So, well, one thing that could work for that, though, is like Uber and Lyft. And you're interested in promoting further growth of ride-sharing companies.
I like ride-sharing. I think that ride-sharing is here to stay. People count on it, rely on it. I don't think there's any way people can go without it now. I mean, it's so convenient.
But so would you facilitate that more in different ways?
I would open up those bus lanes. It used to be for taxis. I think that they could use it for Ubers that have passengers. You know, like if you picked up a passenger, then you can use it to take people home or take them where they're going.
If you were to provide more facilitation for ride sharers, would you want to see them give more of a cut to the city?
You know, I have no idea what kind of cut they're giving the city right now.
I don't think they get any cut. But you could put some sort of a surcharge for a city like San Francisco, then allowing access to the bus lanes the way they did with Google buses,
that's an idea. That's an idea.
Well, okay, so let's jump into just some real quick answers on a few more of the issues that are facing the city. All right, public education in San Francisco.
It needs a lot of work. It needs discipline.
How about social media as part of our lives?
Oh, I'm just learning how to use it. I think it's fine. I mean, just don't let the kids use it in school during class time.
When I say San Francisco, what do you think of?
Should be the most beautiful, wonderful city in the whole United States.
Paul Ibarra Robertson is running to be the next mayor of San Francisco. He spoke with KALW's Ben Trefney. Ben has interviewed all the candidates in the race except two, Robert Jordan, who provided no contact information to the Department of Elections, and Mayor London Breed, whose staff said she was too busy to talk before Election Day. We're still hoping to share what they have to say with you. So if you're listening, Robert Jordan and Mayor Breed, give us a call. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Now it's time for an audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature.
Raise up, draw back.
One, two, let go.
We started coming out here because I got a target and stuff like that. It was really, really fun to do. Yeah, I hit it that time.
Do you know what that sound is? Well, in this story from our archives, reporter Louisa Cardosa takes us to a tucked away area in a pretty popular park.
If you've ever been to the Outside Lands Music Festival at the Polo Fields on the other side of Golden Gate Park, the archery range would probably fit in one corner. There are eight large targets set up, each about 10 feet apart, and standing at varying distances from the main path at the edge of the range. I'm here with Scott Bullard, certified archery coach. and we are about to shoot some arrows.
Down relaxed. Raise up. Draw back.
One, two, let go.
Bullard works at the San Francisco Archery Shop about 10 blocks from the park and gives lessons almost daily. A lot of people are into archery these days as the sport has become so visible in the pop culture. There's Merida from the Disney movie Brave, Clint Barton and Oliver Queen from the comic books Hawkeye and Green Arrow, and of course, Katniss.
Katniss Everdeen?
The stakes are certainly not as high here in the park as they are in the Hunger Games, but honing your skills takes just as much patience and a lot of practice shots.
And that might be best phrased as forming an association between the feeling of your shot and the result on the target.
In other words, knowing what it feels like to land that arrow every time. Archery is a lot more physical than folks might think. During my lesson, I become very aware of my core, which supports my upper back muscles, my neck, and shoulder blades. Those muscles help me raise the bow and have an open rather than collapsed stance.
Archery is an endurance sport, so you want that last arrow to be as good as the first.
People have been shooting arrows at targets here in Golden Gate Park for over 130 years, and there's a wide variety of folks who use the range, from recreational shooters to seasoned bow hunters. After a few more practice shots, Bullard decides to shoot some arrows on his own, so I take a walk around the range to see who else is practicing. The first person I meet is a local beginner, 11-year-old Dorothy Holt.
We started coming out here because I got a target and stuff like that. It was really, really fun to do. Yay! I hit that target.
Dorothy is one of many young women who've started coming to the range in recent years. I ask her if archery is something she wants to pursue as a sport.
I just want to keep going at it, be able to pick up a bow and arrow and shoot.
I keep walking and bump into David Chan.
Hi there. Are you David?
Yep.
If you spend any time here at the range, you'll probably bump into him too. Chan is head coach of the local chapter of the Junior Olympics Archery Development Program, known as the JOAD. He's also one of the volunteers who maintains the targets.
When we were using hay bales, the bales would last about 3 months, and then we'd have to replace the whole bale.
They're now made of rolled-up window screening, encased in wooden boxes, and covered in plastic burlap. But they still need a lot of maintenance. The fire department donates expired fire hose to use as protective edging.
If you hit steel with an arrow, it'll shatter the arrow. So we put the covering on it to help protect something. Try to protect the arrow from getting destroyed when it hits the steel bar.
And speaking of destruction, the archery range is completely unregulated. I asked Chan about the delicate dance of allowing people to manage their own experiences. He says the biggest problem is when people shoot broadhead arrows, which are highly destructive hunting arrows.
We labeled all the signs with no broadheads allowed, and we still find broadheads in the bales, and they just destroy the bales way faster than anything else.
They were designed for war and have sharp blades that tear up the targets almost instantly. So what happens when Chan sees a shooter using these forbidden arrows?
When someone's holding a weapon like that, you do not confront them. Most of the rangers have given us their personal cell phone numbers so that we can call them directly.
Most people, though, follow the rules. Some regulars, like Patrick Hutchins, even have a favorite spot.
Like that's actually our favorite bale, is the just natural hay, because the arrows, they stick in there and they stay at that angle. With the other bales, sometimes if, you know, the middles get eaten out of them, and so arrow will go in and it'll just sag, and we've shot our own arrows by the side, you know, and broadsided them.
Occupational hazard.
Yeah, exactly. Cost of the hobby.
Before I pack up for the day, I decide to take one last shot. I stand with an open stance, draw back my arrow, and aim.
Ooh.
Nice.
Yeah.
Bullseye. In Golden Gate Park, I'm Luisa Cardoza for Cross Currents.